Hey, helicopter podcast listeners, this is John Gray from the Hangar Z Podcast. I want to let you all know Vertical Fowler's Spring 2024 issue is now available. In our Spring 2024 issue, we head over to Leon County for a look at how law enforcement agencies in Northern Florida are combining forces to enhance crime fighting. We also visit Metro Aviation in Shreveport, Louisiana to learn about the work behind installing a Metro interior in an Airbus helicopter. We connect with the experts in the search and rescue sector for an update on the latest trends, training, and tools used in helicopter rescue missions. And finally, we catch up with the Los Angeles Police Department's Aviation Unit for a look at its training programs. All this, plus highlights of some new products and services that made their debuts at Heli Expo 2024. To check out the latest issue of Vertical Valor, go to verticalvalor.com and scroll to the bottom of the page to find magazines. Enjoy.
What is up, guys? It's Halsey with the Helicopter Podcast, and I'm excited to have Amber Harrison on the podcast today. Amber and I actually met just a couple weeks ago while attending the Robinson Helicopter Safety Course for the R-66. It was a really fun class, as fun as classes can be, I guess. The flight portion was fun, and one of my favorite parts about the safety course, whether it was 14 years ago when I went for the R-22, or this year for the R-66, it's always so fun to connect and make new friends, Amber being one of them. And again, special thanks to Vertical Helicast for making the podcast possible. Amber, I thought I would wear the Robinson sweatshirt today, and since we met there. And I see that you are wearing, rocking very new gear from VAI, the new HAI. Tell me about that shirt. It's obviously women in aviation, women in helicopters. Just tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, of course. I figured this was the best place to rock this sweatshirt. It says, "Never underestimate a woman with a helicopter."
I like that.
Which is a great message, right? Got it at HAI, or I guess it's still HAI, the last year of the Heli Expo, HAI Heli Expo before the transition to VAI. But got that just a couple of weeks ago, and I'm happy to wear it and share it with you.
That's awesome. Yeah, I like that. You should never underestimate a woman for anything, right? Especially yes. With a helicopter. It's neat. The industry's slowly pushing towards being more female friendly, and there's some pretty neat women within the industry that are doing cool things. In fact, the podcast has been really cool because we've been able to highlight some of those women and their stories. And I think part of it is like this idea of making things more accessible and making sure that not just little girls, but boys and other people that are not just white guys maybe could see that it's possible to be a helicopter pilot or a mechanic or whatever it may be. And so it's kind of a neat platform with the podcast because, it's obviously a very dominated industry right now. But it's neat to see Nicole from Rainbow Helicopters this year was the chair of HAI. Nicole is someone I've done some business with and selling aircraft. So she's done incredible stuff. So that's cool. Were you at the show?
I was. I was there for 3 days. So yeah, I was at the show, attended some of the safety seminars, got to see all of the really cool helicopters, meet new people, and just navigate around the industry. So it was really awesome. It was really awesome.
Was this your first time?
It was somehow. Awesome. I've been flying for almost 10 years now, and somehow this was the first time I made it to HAI. Was there for work. I am a corporate attorney for an aerospace company. I was there for work, but absolutely there for pleasure just as much.
Totally. Well, you picked a great show. This year in Anaheim, it had really good energy. There's a lot of people, I think there was a lot of decision makers there. Business was getting done. It just felt a little bit more alive than it had felt the last couple of years. It's funny that this was your first show. I've been, you know, in the helicopter industry since 2008, been selling aircraft and having a business within the industry for 6 years. 3 years ago is my first time at HAI. Oh, wow. And we exhibited it the first 2 years. We walked the show and did a lot of fun content this year. But I would highly, you know, recommend to anyone in the industry to really think about going to now VAI. It's going to be in Dallas next year. One thing that my wife and I kind of pointed out when we got home is like, you start making friends just by going to VAI, HAI. And so every year it's kind of fun. You meet the friends that you had met the year before, and then you make new friends, and then it just kind of like continues to spiral. It's like you're just creating this big group of friends. So what was the highlight of the show this year for you?
Oh man, that's really hard to say. I got a lot of really good, I was able to go to a lot of really good panels and see some really amazing speakers. You know, because I am in the UAS industry professionally, it was nice to see some panels and some speakers focused exclusively on UAS and integration into the airspace. But I have to say, man, just being around really cool helicopters, even if you're not flying them, is a lot of fun. I definitely got to spend some time with the Black Hawk that was there, if you remember that one. And so that was a real treat. Got to speak with those pilots who happened to be friends of friends. So again, that connections you make at HAI are pretty interesting. And so it was really awesome to sit down with those fellows and say, like, how does this thing work? What are you guys trying to do with it? And how is this going to be kind of transitioned over to more of a passenger carrying aircraft? So I'd say that was probably one of my highlights was the Black Hawk discussions.
Yeah. The Black Hawk is, you know, obviously an incredible platform. The Chinook seemed to be real popular this year. Yeah. It's like no one had ever seen a Chinook before. And I get it. The CH-47 is amazing, but man, people were like freaking out. I'm like, okay, let's go with it. We did day two of fly-ins. We were doing a bunch of content on day two.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Fly-ins are like my favorite. It's like Christmas for me. It's like, it's so fun. We do a lot of fun content on those days. So, you know, VAI going into the future, it's very interesting. I guess we'll kind of start there. I mean, you're a little bit a part of the future of aviation with the company that you're working for. Tell us just a little bit about that and what you do for them and what that company does. And I'm sure I'll come up with some more questions based on that.
Yeah, of course. So, like I mentioned earlier, I am a corporate attorney. I've been in the aerospace industry the majority of my career, be it, you know, parts manufacturing, certification, and now drone delivery. So the company that I work for is called Zipline International, and we started back in 2016 focused on delivery of critical medical supplies in these rural villages in Africa. So think we're shipping blood, we're shipping vaccines, anti-venom. So if you get bit by a snake in Africa, we have a way to very quickly get some anti-venom to you. And a very interesting use case, and I'm sure this is the first time that this has ever been mentioned on anyone's podcast, and that is the transport of pig semen.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we do talk about pig semen all the time on the show, so.
Right. It's a common theme, I'm sure. But, you know, when you're talking about rural villages and feeding rural villages, previously you'd have a farmer and he'd, you know, have his pig under his arm and he'd walk from village to village and you may be successful in getting offspring or you may not. But now we've got a way of getting it in a climate controlled way from point A to point B so that these rural villages are also able to create more pigs and eat and have a more stable supply chain for their food products. Right. And so we started out in Africa we have this big vision of expanding globally. We're in the U.S. now, so we currently operate in Pea Ridge, Arkansas, and in, outside of the Salt Lake City area in Utah. And so we've partnered with different different customers for different use cases, be it a medical use case where we're flying and delivering medical necessities to, we've partnered with Walmart where we're delivering just general consumer goods. So everything from ice cream to Red Bull, which is a very popular thing to have delivered to you, to, you know, your kids' over-the-counter medications and things like that. So yeah, that's what I do is I'm focused exclusively on expansion in the U.S. And so I have a lot of heavy involvement with the FAA, be it with aircraft certification. We are a Part 135 air carrier. And so obtaining that and remaining compliant with the obligations that come with that is a big part of what I do. And so, yeah, it's a big job and a big task, but we're expanding rapidly. We just announced that we're going to be operating in the UK towards the end of the year. We also announced that we'll be expanding into Dallas. And this year, we're also launching our next generation aircraft, which is pretty exciting. Our current gen is a fixed wing configuration. You can think of it as kind of the long range workhorse that delivers a package via a parachute drop. And this next generation is a very targeted and specific concept. It's a hovercraft that is also capable of forward fixed wing flight. And it has a little droid that comes down and delivers the package and then goes back up into the mothership. And so it's a very precise delivery kind of mechanism.
The mothership. Don't abduct me, zipline.
Right.
I'm fairly sure that I've seen videos on Facebook, like some stories done on zipline where it's like launches right from like a catapult of some sort.
Yes.
And then it does its delivery and then it flies back and it actually like arrests itself with a wire. Is that,
yes,
is that the same?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. It's super cool. It's really fascinating that you're in that space. I'm going to ask some questions based on that space. You can answer them or we can not talk about them, but I'm curious to hear, you mentioned the certification, you know, certification at Heli Expo this year, I was lucky enough to sit down and talk to a lot of the CEOs at the OEMs, David from Robinson, Brad from MD, Bruno from Airbus. And they all kind of had one common denominator of a gripe. It was like certification. Mm-hmm. And some of the argument, not by those guys specifically, but other people within the realm of this space, argue that certification is becoming very difficult because mm-hmm. so many resources are being allocated towards non-helicopter, traditional helicopter operations, unmanned vehicles, drones, eVTOL, whatever it may be. So what is your, I mean, obviously the industry is moving in a different direction, right? I mean, I think we can all agree to that. And that's scary, but cool. I think there's some really fun things coming. It's amazing technology of what you guys are doing and your mission of what you're supplying. So I guess, what does the certification process look like for you guys? Has it been as difficult as it's been for helicopter OEMs and other people within the industry?
It's a tricky question. It's a very tricky question because when we began the process of type certification, we went the traditional TC route, right? And I definitely understand the complaints within the industry because what we understood would have been around a 6-month lead time. It ended up being years, right?
Yeah.
With no clear end in sight. But we are fortunate in that we kind of have an alternative to a type certification. We have, it's something called a 44807 exemption, which acts as a type certification for our category of aircraft. So we are not taking up any resources, just so we're very clear. And the FAA is actually doing something really smart with this, with the 44807. They're moving more towards a self-certification process. And so that enables the company to self-certify that their aircraft and their systems meet these qualifications versus approach as you might have with your traditional TC.
With the exemption and potentially the FAA going to the self-certification, what there still has to be roadblocks, right? Of barriers of getting across to prove safety and things like that. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's still plenty of barriers in place. I think that's smart. I think that's reasonable, right? Because we have to have a way of ensuring that an aircraft is safe before we release it to the public. Because even though our aircraft is uncrewed, it doesn't mean that it comes without any level of risk, right? And so the last thing that anyone wants is an aircraft, even if it's a small one that's flying over people's heads, that has not been properly vetted, and then the testing has not been done to prove that this is a safe and airworthy aircraft. So yes, there's still plenty of barriers to entry.
I can't just go and build one in my garage and self-certify it, call it good. No, I might start a new business.
I mean, listen, if you're a really good builder, you could do it.
I'm not. No, I'm definitely not. I'm good at a lot of things. Fabrication and engineering and complex design of aerial vehicles, probably not my thing.
No.
It's been neat. Some of the cool things that I've done is I went up to Beta Air Technologies last year out of Vermont, in the eVTOL. That's, quite the machine, quite the right. Facility that they have. I felt like I was kind of going into like a Tony Stark's laboratory.
Yeah.
That was fairly neat. Watching the videos on Facebook of what you guys are doing, it's really neat stuff. What is the range that, like in Africa, when they're launching these airplanes or these drones to go and drop off supplies, of course, pig semen and things like that, how far are they able to travel and then come back?
Up to about 100 miles.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, depending on weather and other factors, but like I said, our current platform is kind of the long range workhorse.
Yeah, super cool. So, you're in aviation space. You're part of the, you're on general counsel, corporate counsel. It was funny during the safety course, you and I think there was you and one other individual in the room were both attorneys. So you kept cautioning everyone, be careful what you say, we're attorneys.
Exactly.
But, obviously I met you at Robinson. So not only are you in this space on the attorney side and also what you're doing with these other vehicles, but you are a helicopter pilot. So tell me a little bit about that and, how you got into helicopters, what's drawn you to helicopters and where you're currently at with your experience.
Yeah. So, ever since I was a little girl, I would have these really vivid dreams at night. And in every single one of my dreams, I could fly. And when I say fly, it would be, I would just jump out of the, jump off the ground and would just take off. Yeah. And it was always so disappointing when I woke up and I realized that gravity is a thing and I couldn't just hop up and fly. And my poor parents, definitely had to spend quite a few teary-eyed mornings, like explaining to me how gravity works and why I can't just do this. And so as I got older, I realized hey, there's a way that I could actually fly, right? And so one day I actually, interestingly enough, just gotten out of a really bad relationship. And was like, I need to do something just for myself, something that really inspires me and ignites me. And so I was like, let's go fly helicopters. And so I remember I was living in Seattle at the time. I went to a little school there, Helicopters Northwest. If you're a Seattle flyer, you probably know them. Did my demo flight. And I remember just on the first takeoff, and I obviously was not the one taking off, but while we were taking off, I remember just tears streaming from my eyes, like how beautiful the whole experience was, like the fact that I'm hovering and then flying over this runway, and it was a beautiful spring day, and like, you know, just like the whole majesty of it all just like really hit me as I was taking off.
Especially in that area, it's like so gorgeous with the city and then the sound and Mount Rainier. I mean, it's a nice spot to fly on a nice day.
Yes. Yes. Not great during many months of the year.
But, yes.
But yeah, it was perfect. And I mean, from that moment on, I was hooked. And you know, I ended up getting my private license, went on and got my commercial, and was working towards my CFI, when I had my daughter. I got pregnant and pregnancy hit me like a ton of bricks. And that kind of slowed down my progress. And then, you know, having a 2-year-old running around at home, I haven't quite finished that CFI yet, but I'm still building hours, and I'm still really just enjoying what I'm doing without kind of having the pressure of, you know, getting another certification.
Sure. Amber, I want to talk all about it, but real fast, we're going to take a quick sponsor call.
Thank you to our sponsor, Hillsboro Heli Academy. Embark on your helicopter pilot journey with Hillsboro Heli Academy. Known worldwide, they make it easy to achieve both U.S. and European helicopter licenses. Visit flyhaa.com to schedule your introductory flight and turn your dream into a career.
All right. Thanks to our sponsors for making the helicopter podcast possible. I'm here with Amber. And we're just talking about, it's funny that you were mentioning the demo flight and you know, that you got like emotional. I was talking to Max Lyons yesterday. Actually, Max is owner of Hillsboro Aviation. That's where I learned how to fly. They actually haven't owned the flight school for about the past 10 years, so he's not associated with that. But I think he said something like 10,000 pilots in his time that he helped create. And, you know, I told him, I said, man, your guys' best weapon in the flight school had to be that silly demo flight, because, you know, I had no interest in being a helicopter pilot. I was going off to college, actually. I had done 1 year at Embry-Riddle and figured that I wanted to go to like a school in Utah because I could ski and still go to their pilot program. I mean, I was like, tuition was being sent. Everything was lined up, and then my parents got me the demo flight on June 1st or somewhere around there, my birthday. And you know, that I tell people, and I don't think it's an exaggeration, I took the demo flight a day or two later. I had a job working line service at Hillsboro Aviation because they had an employee discount. That was a Wednesday. And by Friday, I had begged my grandma to co-sign on my Sally Mae private student loan funding. And, you know, I think within a week or two, I was enrolled in that professional helicopter pilot mm-hmm. program. And that was my career path at that point, which mm-hmm. is, you know, looking back at it now, it's so funny because my life is just, it's just anything. It's all helicopter all the time for the most part. And so it's so wild to think that a 18-minute flight was what sealed the deal, you know, for that. Right. And, you know, it's just neat to kind of hear that experience, that it was, you know, something that you've always wanted to do. And you can fly airplanes, of course, and that's flying. But I think you're like this idea where you're a little girl and you're having these dreams of like physical flying, mm-hmm. the helicopter, other than like, of course, some of those jetpacks that they have now, is probably the closest way to actually get that feeling, that hover. I mean, for me, picking up a helicopter and putting it into a hover is still like the coolest part of flying an aircraft, flying a helicopter. It's like, oh my God, I'm flying. You know, it's yeah. just, it's so incredible. I had, you know, fixed wing experience going into flying aircraft. So I was kind of familiar with being up in the air and talking to, you know, ATC and communicating. And, you know, some of that stuff was already kind of dialed in for me. Did you have any type of piloting knowledge going into it, or were you very green?
I was very green. I was, I mean, almost as green as you can get. Again, I've been working in the industry for quite some time, but no, I actually really, sorry to any fixed wing pilots here, but I really hate flying airplanes. I've really tried to get into it, but it just doesn't compare. I enjoy being low and slow. And that will kill you in an airplane. So, you know.
Yeah, I feel the same. I guess my goals in life are to own my own helicopter that I can fly, and then own my own plane that I can sit in the back. That's,
there you go.
I like the idea.
Yeah.
I like the idea of planes because they can go, you know, faster and further. But I mean, look, there's no comparison. It's helicopters are such an extension. You know, I don't know where you're, obviously you have your, how many hours now?
About 500.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a lot of helicopter experience at this point. I mean, for me, it got to the point where it almost felt like I'm, you know, just putting on a pair of pants, like it's becoming an extension of your body. So
yeah, you know,
that's something neat about helicopters. What was it like, starting flight training, very green, very novice? How did you overcome some of that? Because I'm sure that that could be really overwhelming, specifically in a helicopter, because there's so much harder to fly than an airplane in the beginning.
Yeah. You know, I was super lucky because I had an amazing instructor. If he's listening to this, he was actually in our 66 course as well. Really seasoned pilot. Very focused on ground school, or at least as focused on ground school as he was on flying. So really prioritized that and ensured that I knew what the heck I was talking about before I just went out and flew. You know, I think another thing for me is I don't know, just when I was learning to fly, like everything was so exciting. And even those days where I just like couldn't quite get it or didn't quite understand it, like those felt like good experiences to go through so that I could learn from that. Right. And again, my instructor, was really good about, you know, sitting me down after a flight and saying like, okay, what went well and what didn't go well. And what didn't go well, let's sit and talk about it. Right. And so really kind of taking the time to clear my head and really understand what didn't go right and why it didn't really helped improve for that next flight. And I think at the time, man, I was just so hungry to learn about, you know, everything about helicopters that I could, that, you know, those days where I felt frustrated, I never once felt that sense of like, forget this, this is too hard. I just always really enjoyed what I was doing. So
That's important to do. In fact, I think if, you know, I taught for a long time, I've taught a lot of guys, taught a lot of girls how to fly as well. I feel like that's one of the differences that I enjoy about instructing a female is that they're like a little bit more open to this idea of like, you have to not be great to learn. Like you have to be in that step first before you're like great. For me, I'm like, I have 2 hours of flight time. Why can't I hover? This is ridiculous. You know, like, you know, and a lot of my male students kind of had that same, you know, mantra. So I think that that's, you know, it seems like females specifically do a better job at being able to kind of look at the big picture and understand like, hey, look, I'm still learning, you know, and not being so self-critical, because I think being so self-critical added hurdles to like my training, right? Because I would start getting frustrated. And instead of looking at the big picture, I would just shut down. Like, I'm just done.
Yeah.
Let's go back. You know, or if we continue to fly, no learning is occurring. It's like here and then out here. It's just, it's gone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I tell everyone on the podcast, we talk about it, it's like this idea of, you know, you have to appreciate learning, because it is fun. Yes. At the end of the day, you're learning how to fly a helicopter. It's such a unique, cool thing. There's very few people that can look up and see a helicopter fly over and be like, yep, I can fly that. You know, right. It's so unique. So, you know, being easy on yourself, what were some of the biggest kind of maneuver hurdles for you when you were learning?
You know, we did a lot of mountain flying, obviously in Seattle, and a lot of mountain flying, you know, with clouds or overcast or slight drizzle, or weird wind tunnels coming through the mountains and that type of thing. And so I feel like, one of the biggest things that I had to get over, especially like early in my helicopter piloting life, is, like not overcorrecting or over maneuvering in windy conditions. You know, you slow it down, you just stay calm, stay with the aircraft. Don't let it, don't overcorrect when you get, breeze hitting you, that type of thing. The other maneuver that I really still to this day am not a big fan of is, doing any kind of Vichard recovery, or, vortex ring state kind of training, only because it feels very intense as you're going through it. So yeah, I think practicing with winds or any kind of, wind or weather, and then any kind of vortex ring state were the two things that I probably struggled with the most.
Yeah, it's difficult. First off, too, I've never actually seen Riverside is giving the thumbs up. Are you seeing that? I've never seen it do that.
I know. I saw that too, and it kind of got me off track for a second. But now, like, I don't know. I think Google I was Meet talking with that. My hands.
We use Google Meet at Helicopter, and we meet every morning. Right. And I'm a hands talker, and so before you know it, there's like balloons flying up behind me and fireworks, and there's a lot of thumbs. I've never seen it on this platform. I can't say that I love it being on this platform. Interesting. You know, over controlling it's so easy. I mean, even with me at the safety course, I don't fly a ton anymore. And so for me to go from not flying for a long time, and especially not flying an R-66 in this case, to going to like that training flight, you know, I just had to be so cognizant of like, hey, just relax on the controls, because I feel like when you're intent, you know, you're so tied up, it's like this intensity, which can, you know, make it, you know, very difficult and so easy to over control the aircraft. You know, I think it's also really cool that you had the experience. I think that's one of the cool things of the Pacific Northwest is you get to fly into mountainous areas. You get to discover how wind interacts with the terrain, understanding the windward and the leeward side, and kind of putting it all together. It's just, it's one of the magical spots of
using your carb heat.
lots of carb heat.
lots of carb heat. Not something so I do you, down in Southern California now.
did you learn in the R-22 then?
I did, 22 and 44.
Yeah, it's awesome. I always suggest to people, you know, get as much time as you can in the R-22, and then get the SFAR requirement, you know, for the R-44. It's just kind of a more cost effective route that, you know, kind of helps get you there. So as a commercial pilot, but not flying professionally, again, you've actually amassed quite a bit of hours for someone that doesn't do this for a job. What are some of the, where are you getting this flight time? Are you going and renting the aircraft occasionally? Like what's your, you know, how often are you flying helicopters?
So I'm trying to get in at least once a week. And I get that in a couple of different places. There's a flight school near me. And so I just, you know, go out with a safety pilot and just have a good time. I like to play this game with my daughter and my partner where they go hide somewhere in my neighborhood and I get to go find them in the helicopter. And so my 2-year-old, you know, looks up and of course now she thinks anybody flying above her is mama. But, so, you know, I've gotten some flight time there. I've also done quite a bit of flying in Guatemala. which sounds a little bit random, but they actually have, it's the third largest helicopter community in the world, second only to, I think, Brazil and the U.S. But I've made some really amazing helicopter buddies down there. Actually, another female pilot who flies professionally down in Guatemala, she's been able to help me, set me up with an aircraft to rent as well as a safety pilot. Very important when you're flying in a place that you don't necessarily know all the rules to, and are not super great at their native language. So I try to get it in whenever I can, be it, the local schools or, there's a couple of helicopters that, I can rent from time to time in the area.
I like that you're flying with a safety pilot.
Yes.
As a private commercial pilot, obviously you can go and fly a helicopter by yourself. You can take friends and family, and you can even get paid, on the commercial mm-hmm. side. But I think I brought it up during the safety course that so many just private flyers, and not just, I understand that you have your commercial, but I'm just saying folks that fly for fun or hobby, mm-hmm. Not necessarily for career, I think they get their license and then, man, they forget about it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they'll go and they'll during their flight review, they'll fly with the CFI. But helicopters specifically, in my opinion, it's like, man, you should fly with an instructor as often as possible if you are a not professional pilot. I think being able to get in with someone and, just have that little safety blanket there mm-hmm. is a fairly cheap insurance policy. And second, you can go out and you can continue to build your toolbox, continue to become a better pilot. You can do maneuvers that you shouldn't be doing by yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I really like that you said that, and I like that you do that, because I think it's an important message for everyone in the industry. I think one of the reasons Robinson, gets the name that it gets of, these aircraft that are not reliable or they're not safe, there's a lot of accidents. As we saw in the safety course, it's 90+% decision making.
Yes.
And pilots, whether a pilot's making a bad decision to go and fly in weather that they shouldn't, mm-hmm. whether the pilot makes a bad decision about their performance and the capabilities, oftentimes extending the limitation.
And exactly.
So, I think if more people took this idea of going out and flying with a safety pilot. So I'm happy to hear that with you. And it's funny that you say Guatemala. My Facebook just reminded me that 2 years ago, I guess, I was there in Guatemala. I went twice. I went back to back. I was working a helicopter transaction out of Guatemala. And
nice.
I had no idea going into it, but you're exactly right. There's a lot of helicopters in Guatemala. It was so cool. I was in Guatemala City for the majority and, mm-hmm. There's so many hangars there that are just stuffed full of helicopters.
Like really nice helicopters too.
Oh yeah.
Turbine engine, twin engine. Like, there's a nice fleet down there. That's for sure.
It's definitely interesting because that's one of the places where you can see, it kind of seems like in that part of the world, it's like you're either living in complete poverty or you have a Bell 407 GX. Like
there's no in between.
Yeah. It doesn't seem, and I think a lot of the helicopters, to what I'm to understand, is there's, a lot of coffee that's being produced out of Guatemala and the roads to get to the coffee farms or whatever it's called, are dangerous because of like getting robbed, people, I guess, or in fact, the helicopter that we were buying, I was talking to their pilot and he's like, the owner of this thing hates helicopters. He's scared of them. He doesn't like them, but it's like a necessity for him to be able to get from Guatemala City to his different, coffee farms all over the country. And so it's, I think that they're certainly used for business there a lot, specifically in that area. So it's gorgeous. You have volcanoes and it's a neat place to fly.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly why I wanted to fly in Guatemala, because I had this crazy idea to go from Guatemala City up to Tikal to see the Mayan ruins, but it's a 13-hour drive.
Yeah.
Or like a, you know, 50 mile or whatever it is as the crow flies. So I'm like, no, I'm just going to get my pilot's license and fly that. That's ridiculous. So yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, even, yeah, I drove from Guatemala City to Antigua and spent the weekend in Antigua. And I don't know how many miles it is, like maybe 20, 30 miles, if that, to get to Antigua. And
yeah,
it took like 3 hours, you know, yeah. And it's fairly scary. You know, they drive.
Yes.
I remember I had like a little handler for the first time I was there, and we were chatting before I got there. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm going to get the rental car. And he's like, oh, no. He's like, you should not drive. And I'm like, oh, I can drive. And he's like, no. We will drive for you. And then, of course, the driving from the airport to the hotel, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm very glad that I'm not driving.
Good call.
but it's interesting, for as crazy as they drive, and I saw this in Thailand as well, as crazy as they drive, I never saw accidents. Like, there's
right?
It's like they're just all good at driving in this just complete chaos. So it's really neat that you've been able to fly down there. I think we should try to put something together where we go and do some fun content in Guatemala.
Done. I'm there.
So I'm all about the helicopter adventures. I want to talk more about wellness. It's something that you're into. But before we get into that, we just have to take a quick pause for our last sponsor call.
Thank you to our sponsor, Robinson Helicopter Company, the choice for unrivaled safety and reliability so you can accomplish any mission with confidence. For more than half a century, Robinson has been at the forefront of the helicopter industry. From the R-22 to the R-66 turbine, Robinson makes helicopters accessible so more people can accomplish more missions. Climb higher. For additional information, visit www.robinsonheli.com.
All right. Coming back to the helicopter podcast with Amber. Amber and I met recently, just a couple weeks ago, at the safety course there in Torrance. Did you enjoy your time there?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Like, any time that I can take time off of work and talk about helicopters and get to fly helicopters, absolutely. I was on cloud nine.
And had you been to the safety course before?
No, that was my first safety course.
Awesome. So that was like, yeah. What was the factory fairly wild to you?
You know what? I was telling other people during the course, like, I've been in aerospace manufacturing quite a while in my career. And I have to say that was one of the cleanest and most organized shop floors that I think I've seen. And so while it may seem a little chaotic to folks that aren't, you know, quite so familiar with the shop floor of an aerospace company, I felt like it was very clean and well organized. So I think they're doing a great job there.
Yeah, no, I thought that's always cool. The factory is always my favorite part. I got lucky since we were doing content. I think it was day two or day three, I forget, but kind of when class ended and the factory was kind of cooling down for the day. We had a gentleman, his name was David. He's been there for 38 years.
Oh, wow.
And we got to do a personal kind of one-on-one walkthrough of the factory, which was, you know, kind of like a special treatment to really be able to go and do that. And interestingly enough, I think someone told us, like, we're the third time in 50 years where cameras were actually allowed in the factory or something crazy like that. So it was really neat. You know, David Smith, the new CEO, is really pushing Robinson in a direction to be a little more public facing. Mm-hmm. And so it's really fun to collaborate with David and Robinson to go down and do a bunch of cool content.
Yeah.
The safety course is neat to me. And I thought they did a good job. Our instructor did a good job. I think it's a great, as I kind of explained it to one of my colleagues recently, it's like you go there and you don't really learn on the ground portion like new concepts, right? You talk about low G and mass bumping and low RPM, but being able to talk about those and then being able to look at incidents and accidents that spawn directly from that, and as a group kind of collectively going through on you know, dissecting the incidents, accidents, and, you know, realizing, man, we I feel like we have such a choice to be safe pilots. Like it's
right.
You know, it's really our job. 90% of accidents caused by pilot error, as ruled out by the NTSB, not the OEM themselves.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so it's an interesting thing. And for me, even though I have a lot of experience and your instructor that was there, obviously has a lot of experience, I think guys like us can go there, and it's always a good reminder of like realizing the magnitude of what being a PIC is all about. And so that was really fun.
And if you remember, we had two pilots that had experienced wire strikes that were able to, during the wire strike portion of
that
it,
was crazy.
Say, hey, I actually went through this. I lived through it. Let's talk about it. And so it goes from being like a foreign, like we know it happens, but you know, I've not experienced it, or someone close to me has not experienced it. But then you go to this classroom situation where you've got two people that were able to say, I experienced it. I lived through this, and this is how, and this is why. Like to me, that's going to like gel in my memory forever.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. For our listeners, this was wild. Amber brings up a good point. One of the guys in the class, I think he was from China, was like last year in a wire strike, and there's video of it. So we actually watched this video of the wire strike, and I have to say it's like a pretty horrific wire strike. It's not like a he hit like a little wire and landed safely. Like he hit a wire in a fully loaded. I think he had every seat occupied in the 66. You watch the helicopter go into the wire, and then it gets flung backwards, spins because his tail rotor gets knocked off, and he's probably 200-300 feet up.
Yeah.
And then somehow lands, skids up, you know, in this.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he was like maybe in a marsh where he landed. So he kind of maybe had like some extra cushion. But you could tell, I mean, that guy was like pretty shook. Still.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was an emotional thing for him to talk about. And then the other guy, man, that guy just that poor dude had every
the like layers of shit.
We're not in that his favor that day. That was to set it up for the listeners, was in a Gazelle, had an engine flame out due to I think water in the fuel during his auto rotation with his, I think he said his wife and some other friends were in the aircraft.
Grandma, I think.
Grandma, that's what it was. Yeah.
During
the, you know, the guy was pretty chill about it. He entered the auto rotation doing his thing. And unfortunately, during his auto rotation, also hit a wire and then somehow made it down and landed somewhat safely enough to, you know, have everyone walk away. The only thing he didn't have was a bird strike. I mean, everything else he had, like it was a wild story. Mm-hmm. And so, I agree with you, Amber. It was really neat to. Need is a weird word. It was interesting and educational to have those particular individuals in our class. And, you know, wire strikes especially are usually preventable. A good buddy of mine had a wire strike a couple of years ago. One of the best pilots that I know. But it came down to a thing where he'd been working nonstop ag, 13-hour days. He flew the same field every single day. He knew exactly where all the wires were, and he hit the wire. Right. So it's a constant reminder that you got to really be on it. Something that I think we had kind of briefly talked about at the course and then obviously in our correspondence leading up to the show is you're really big into wellness. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it sounds like you may even have a business in which you are helping with physical wellness and mental wellness geared towards business folks, but also pilots. And so I'm curious to kind of where did that idea come from? And what is the current state of wellness for the helicopter industry?
Yeah. So let's touch on where it came from first. So as you mentioned, I'm launching a new program where I'm focusing on health and wellness for pilots and others. The idea kind of came to me because we in the aviation world put a lot of emphasis and focus on our health be it physical or mental health. You're required to get a medical certificate if you want to fly professionally, right? But there feels like there's a significant lack of resources when it comes to that. It's like, just be healthy. You can get your medical and like you figure out how to be healthy and stay healthy. And heaven forbid, you know, you have any kind of mental health struggles, because that's a problem too, but we're not really going to tell you how to fix it. You got to figure that out on your own, right? And so I really wanted to provide resources to everyone, but especially pilots are near and dear to my heart, especially in a way where like your livelihood depends on that, right? And so I was also coming at it from the perspective of, I'm a corporate attorney. I spend most of my time like this at a desk, and it's very difficult to find time for movement and activity during my day. But I've been able to figure out a way somehow in this world to do the things that I love while also being a corporate attorney, which if you haven't heard is a pretty demanding job. And so, you know, I've been able to really carve out time for health and wellness. Like I do aerial silks, I do contortion, amateur obviously, but like these things are very important to me. It's a facet of my life that's really critical to my mental health. Flying helicopters, again, that's something that's very important and critical to my mental health to keep me at the peak performance that I need to be the best mom I can be, to be the best corporate attorney I can be, even the best pilot that I can be. So that's kind of where this idea came from, is I wanted to make sure that people had the right resources to really prioritize and think about their health and well-being, even those people who have very limited time, like myself. So yeah. Does that give a good picture for you?
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, health and wellness is, I think, a struggle for so many people. Mm-hmm. I know that I ride the roller coaster of wanting to be healthy, and the idea of being healthy sounds nice, but with a demanding work life schedule and everything else that I pack in, it can be very challenging. And I think, you know, a lot of the industry is fairly the same. I would look at my peers within the helicopter industry, and I would say, like, I don't consider them all to be super healthy individuals. You're on the road a lot. You're right. Not eating healthy.
Right.
And something else that I noticed within aviation space is a fairly heavy level of drinking. When it comes to alcohol, you know, obviously alcohol is something that as pilots, you can still partake, you know, you can't really do any other drugs, of course. So I feel like pilots, in fact, have an excess. My personal story with that is that I drank a lot for a long time, and to a point where I made a life decision about 5 years ago of saying, I don't think it's really good for me. And it seems like I might be going down a path that I don't want to get down or go down. And so, you know, I choose to not drink. But I even feel weird saying that at a public forum specifically, because it kind of would illuminate that maybe I had a problem, which maybe is not ideal for, you know, the FAA,
right,
or things right. like that. But the other conundrum that I have in life, specifically with pilots, is the idea of like mental health. Obviously, yeah. You can look at someone and say, that person looks healthy, or they don't look healthy. But you can't look at someone and say, that person doesn't look mentally healthy, or they are mentally healthy. And I feel like just from my personal experience of the human condition is that no matter who you are, no matter what you do, you're going to have good mental days and bad mental days. But I feel like with pilots specifically, you can't ever talk about that. You can't talk about feeling anxious sometimes, or maybe even depressed, right? You go and fill out your medical thing. I think it asks you, right? Do you have anxiety? Do you have depression? I kind of laugh at it because I'm like, well, I'm human. So I think, yeah, but I can't answer that.
We all do to some level. We all do in this world that we live in, where, you know, we're high action, high anxiety type of society. We all have it. It's just how well are you able to manage it, right? But you're exactly right. You start putting, you know, the dreaded D word, depression or anxiety on your medical paperwork, and you can oftentimes kiss your medical certificate goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a very dangerous, dangerous admission. And for me, you know, obviously I come from like my dad, you know, he's been on Prozac. Sorry, Dad. I think my brother's been on Prozac and ADHD medication. I mean, there's ways, of course, medicating. I'm not a big fan in any medication. I don't even take Advil if I don't have to. So, you know, I've always tried to use like physical activity. I'm an avid skier. I skied 30 times this year so far. I kiteboard in the summer. I mountain bike. I hike. Getting outdoors, I feel like that's kind of like my, in fact, Cellocopter, my business sponsors a veteran organization for veterans struggling with PTSD called the Dirt Therapy Project. It's about getting veterans on mountain bikes and using mountain bikes as a healthy outlet of therapy. So other than like that, from your perspective, what are ways that pilots can help themselves encourage positive mental health?
Yeah. So you're exactly spot on with physical activity. I feel like that's the one thing that can make the biggest impact for the most amount of people. Now, there are some hurdles to that, though. Let's say you've got an old back injury or a knee injury or whatever. Just getting started, it's all about those small little incremental changes, right? You don't have 2 hours in your day to work out. Well, let's start with 5 minutes and move up from there, right? And so that concept kind of works regardless of, you know, my schedule's packed or I have an injury. Those small and incremental steps can lead to major changes in your physical health. But then when we're also thinking about the overall mental health picture, and I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, so, you know, there's your disclaimer there. But, you know, another key aspect of that is managing your responsibilities and managing your workload. Like one thing that I've noticed in my life personally, and I know that I'm not the only one, is I love to pile it full of stuff. And then once I get it full of stuff, I get completely overwhelmed because I have way too much stuff, right? And so just being able to like doggedly prioritize and identify what's really important in your life and be able to start carving out those things that aren't, that's going to help your mental workload. And that's going to ultimately improve your levels of anxiety. I've got a great example for this, right? You know, when I was learning to fly, I was flying about 20 hours a week. I was working about 60 hours a week. And at that time, during that year, I was also performing in about 10 different aerial shows. And so I would wake up in the morning, 5 a.m., again, prioritizing my top priority. I would be at the airport by 6. I'd get at least an hour of flight time in. I'd go straight from there to work. I'd work a full day. I'd go straight from there to my aerial gym where I'd do my show perform, my show prep. And then I'd finally go home after a long day and sleep hard, right? But if you'll notice within that schedule, I'm not holding anything that's unnecessary in my life. I don't own a TV to give you an idea of like how doggedly I've fought to carve out those unnecessary things in my life that ultimately free up my mental bandwidth for things like flying a helicopter while, you know, also having a major meltdown with my 2-year-old and then also having all of these work obligations, because the more that you're piling on, again, that can aggravate that anxiety, the more opportunities that you have to aggravate that anxiety, the more you're going to get aggravated. So,
yeah. Yeah, I know it. I feel like I know it well. I feel like I do an okay job at being able to kind of, I go in waves, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm really doing good, and I'm committed to healthy practices, healthy ways of living, and then other times, like the situation I let it turn the opposite way, and I and I'm prioritizing like emailing and work and all this other things that seem and sound important, but you know, I've been trying to kind of live by this idea of where you have to go out and take a couple hours every day for yourself.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we live in a world that you have to be like this ruthless entrepreneur. And there's some guys out there like Elon Musk, right? I mean, he's like the most famous entrepreneur. The guy talks about sleeping in his office and not showering. And, you know, I don't know if he's happy. He's very rich and very successful. So for me, I have this like guilt sometimes, like when I leave to go skiing during a work day or go on a mountain bike ride. So, you know, one of the things that I've been mentally telling myself recently is like, look, life is short. You got one shot to live, and making money and being successful for me is important. So I want that to happen. But, you know, if I'm given the opportunity to ever be an old man and be on my deathbed, you know, I always look at it like, am I going to be upset that I didn't send that email that day?
Nope.
Or I'm going to be more upset that I didn't spend the extra time with my wife or go skiing or take care of myself. It's about kind of trying to look at the big picture for me, but it's very difficult. We live in a very chaotic society. It's hard to, I feel like our poor little brains are probably always moving faster than they were designed to move.
Yes. Completely agree with that. And you know, the way that I think about time management and time prioritization is, and I'm sure this will resonate with you and viewers and listeners, but kind of think of it like an auto rotation. Okay. You've got buckets of energy for your auto rotation. You've got your RPM, you've got your airspeed, you've got your altitude. You know, you can pull from some of those buckets, but if you pull too much from any one bucket, you're not going to have the energy that you need to flare and to level the ship, right? Well, it's the same thing with life, you know, and of course this is a oversimplification because I know we all have so many buckets, but if you have a work bucket and you have a family bucket and you have a free time hobby bucket, if you pour all of your time into your free time hobby bucket, well, you're going to have nothing for your work or your family. So your auto rotation, you're going to crash into the ground, right? And it's the same thing if you do nothing but work, you know, those other buckets are going to suffer. And so bringing it into helicopter terms, it's all about creating that balance.
That's an incredible analogy. Really cool, Amber. Well, thanks for sharing that. If listeners are interested in connecting with you to talk more about physical and mental wellness and maybe how you can help them continue to live healthy lives, both physically and mentally, so they can continue to get their class 2 medical for our commercial operators out there, what's the best way for people to reach out?
So probably through Instagram or TikTok, assuming that the government doesn't shut that down. I'm going to be starting, actually Sunday is my 40th birthday. And so as a gift to myself, thank you. As a gift to myself, I am going to start doing something that I'm calling 365 days of yoga and movement. And so essentially every day I'm going to be breaking down a different yoga pose or exercise movement type of concept. And then at the end of every week, kind of finishing it off with a flow where I use those poses or positions, whatever. And so you can follow me on Instagram or TikTok, follow along on that journey. It is going to be in the air, all one word, _ fit life, all one word.
Okay. We will also link that into this episode bio. So yeah, go check out Amber. It's always neat to connect with folks in the industry, Amber, and I think it's super cool. You know, again, one of the things that we pointed out in our safety course, there was maybe 15 of us, 14 were guys, one was you. So, you know, it's nice to see females in the industry because I hope that it just gives the optic that you can be anyone and fly a helicopter. It doesn't matter. Yeah. And I think historically it's very male dominated. So it's neat to have cool, strong women in the industry, whether they're flying professionally or whether you're just flying for fun and just something that you love doing. So thank you so much for being willing to come on the show. Thank you for some of the content help at the safety course as well. I appreciate that. To our listeners, thank you for listening to the Helicopter Podcast and to Vertical Helicast platform. Also, don't forget, we have a YouTube. All of our podcasts are also on video, so you can check it out there as long as you're not driving. If you're driving, keep it audio. We also put cool videos on YouTube of like the vlog that we'll be doing with Robinson, a lot of HAI cool videos. So go check it out. Subscribe, like, do whatever you're supposed to do. Amber, thank you again. And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Hey, podcast listeners. My name is Halsey Schreider, and I'm the principal broker and owner of Celicopter. Celicopter is a new age, data-driven, helicopter-specific sales brokerage, bringing helicopter listings to new heights. At Celicopter, we utilize digital positioning, paid advertising, and our large network of industry professionals to move your helicopter quickly and efficiently. Unsure the value of your helicopter? Lucky for you, Celicopter offers a complimentary market evaluation. All you have to do is contact the team today. Are you ready to take your helicopter listing from Mayday to Payday? Easy. Fill out the contact information below and a Celicopter pilot agent will reach out shortly. Celicopter. List it, sell it, done.